everybody, and welcome to Radio Radar, episode 127, the weekly podcast from GamesRadar.com, where we talk about all the big events in the world of video games, as well as our top seven and our big reviews, and talking with you, the community. I'm Henry Gilbert, that's H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter, follow me, and I'm here with...
Lorenzo Valoria.
Max Womagy.
And Ashley Reed. That was a good word.
But it's okay.
Twitter stuff, doing things.
And
promo.
Twitter promotion.
Self-promotion. Promo. There we go.
There we go. Right. No, it's... I'm trying to get to 5,000 followers. I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'm getting close.
Damn.
Jeez.
Fun week, guys. We had President's Day off. That was nice.
It was nice.
It feels like a long time ago now.
All those presidents. Damn. Thanks, presidents, for having
presidents.
Your birthdays.
Abraham Lincoln. Yeah.
Did you guys ever in school get Lincoln and Washington's birthday off, or was it always just President's Day?
Just President's Day for me.
It was only ever just President's Day.
Where I lived, I think, once in kindergarten and maybe first grade in Arkansas, I was like, okay, it's President's Day. Or no, it's Washington's birthday, and 2 weeks later, Lincoln's birthday, and...
Really?
It was a nice back-to-back thing.
In my day, we used to have 2 days off for the president's birthday.
Well, then I think Martin Luther King Day then became a more widely recognized day off. And so just to not have 3 days off in a row, they just combined the two presidents into President's Day.
Yeah.
And that's the story of President's Day. Well, meanwhile, our Brits, they don't have presidents. Our British coworkers, they don't have presidents, so they had to work that day.
Do they have, like, the Queen's Day?
I don't know. They have, like, a million bank holidays.
Yeah, it's bank holidays.
I don't feel too bad.
What the hell is a bank holiday?
I think it's just a boring way of just, like, it's like, a day off, the bank holiday.
The bank's closed.
The banks don't want to be open today, so
well,
nobody else should.
Tuesday was Pancake Day in England, which is... their equivalent of Mardi Gras, actually.
It's flapjacks.
Like, it's the you apparently it's a tradition to eat pancakes before Lent. That's the tradition
because
for breakfast.
Because you can't eat it for the next 40 days.
I don't know who would swear off pancakes for Lent. Like, why would that be your thing?
It's like, how rich and luscious pancakes. Yeah. Don't know how I'm going to go without those.
Yeah, I don't know how those feel all that special. But then again, we had pancakes on Tuesday as well.
Like, you had pancakes.
They were the free ones. Well, actually, I ate those pancakes the next day on Wednesday that were in the fridge. Pancakes don't keep all that well, but if you put enough syrup on them and heat them up in the microwave, they're good enough.
Yeah, they leather up after a while.
And they're free. They were free pancakes.
They were free. I've just never been a pancake person, so I did not partake in the pancakes.
Never been a pancake girl.
I'm more of a waffle guy. Lego.
Yeah.
Lego waffle, my Lego.
Fill all those good little divots with stuff.
The nooks and crannies.
There we go.
Oh, man, I saw... I follow people on Facebook who are getting experimental with their waffle maker, and so they did one where they got one of those Pillsbury rolls of cinnamon rolls, and then laid out that dough in the waffle maker and made waffles with that. And they're like, "Oh, this is the best thing ever!"
And then they put the
icing on the cinnamon roll waffles.
There was a whole BuzzFeed article on that. It was like what you could do with your waffle maker. I think that might have been one of them. And then
they were trying it out.
Yeah, there's
shit,
like
now
an
I
egg
wanna
thing.
Do this stuff.
You could get your eggs in covering waffle makers.
Yeah. Fun fact, that's how the guy who founded Nike made his first shoe, put rubber in a waffle iron.
Oh. Did not know that. That guy's kind of evil, though.
You don't need to tell me.
Yeah, but anyway, isn't he from Washington? Or?
He's from Oregon.
Like yeah, Oregon. That's right. Yeah.
He gives all his nice stuff to a school there.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I guess. oh shoot! Now I totally lost what other tangent I was going to go off on. Oh yeah. Now, instead of what we are diversifying our content here on Games Radar, though, as you may have noticed lately, and I actually am, I have a cold. That's part of my diversification. Now, I'm starting to try out some wrestling based content on our site. I just wrote a whole guide to why you want to get the WWE Network and why it's so cool. but if you don't, if you don't think you care about wrestling or you haven't, like, if you never liked wrestling, that's a harder sell, like I suppose. But if you've ever liked wrestling, then you'll want the network. Like it is the best thing ever. I actually am like overloaded with pro wrestling right now because I not only subscribe to the WWE Network, which has literally thousands of hours of things I'd want to watch, but I also subscribe to the Japan-only New Japan Pro Wrestling Network, which also streams things. And so, like, in one day, I watched a four-hour over the weekend, I watched a four-hour Japanese wrestling pay-per-view and then went to the WWE Network to watch another special. I was like, this might be too much wrestling, even for one person. It's great wrestling. It's been great wrestling, but it just might be too much for one person.
You're reaching the wrestling event horizon.
But you guys should check that out, that article. Also, that on the stream this week, to tie it into wrestling as well, on my Thursday stream, I did WWE 2K15, which was we played through all the matches that are going to happen on the pay-per-view, and we had a good time. It was me and Chris Hoffman of MacLife, the other, well, actually, he's not the only wrestling expert in the office. There's also
Ray.
Ray. Ryan was the name I had. I was like, no. It's like,
Ray,
I'm sorry, Ray. I'm real sorry. Me and him have gone to Hood Slam shows around here together. Like, have I talked about this on the podcast before? Hood Slam?
No.
It's an indie wrestling thing that happens in Oakland the first Friday of every month, and they do really crazy, goofy stuff. It is like it's like trashy wrestling, but I love it, and it's so silly. Though, if you don't like the smell of marijuana, like legal marijuana use in California, but if you don't like the smell of it, don't go there because you will be in, they are smoking in the ring. Like, characters are smoking weed, and when you smell it, you're like, that's not fake. That's not tobacco. Like, that's for real.
Just hotbox in the ring.
So, well,
that's the wacky tobacco.
And you literally will be hotboxes. It is in, like, a kind of a warehouse. It takes place in a warehouse, and you won't be sitting down.
There's like, kind of no lights and boarded up windows.
I love that's
how
they advertise it. It's in kind of a warehouse.
I love how this is like, it's called Hood Slam in Oakland, and
in
it's
a warehouse.
In a warehouse. And there's weed everywhere.
Yeah, but that is the fun appeal of it. It's so trashy. Like they also have a saying like, "Don't bring your kids." It says that like that's kind of their tagline. Like,
that's their logo.
Don't bring your kids. but they also have video game stuff. Like they had what was the craziest? Oh, they had a dude dressed as Scorpion who is billed as I'm Scorpion and I'm wrestling. And faced Link, and he's like, I'm Link, and I'm wrestling. And then it's like Ken and Ryu. It's not like this is a person who is a fan of Ken and Ryu fighting each other who dressed as them. They are presented as Ken is here and Ryu is here, and Cammy is backing them up.
That's pretty funny.
It's a lot of fun.
Amazing.
It's not a great performance. Like, as in, if you're looking for like the greatest wrestlers in the world, that's not what you're going to see. But it's a real good laugh. But again, you have to be okay with the smell of marijuana because, like, you will be buried in it.
Don't bring your kids.
Don't bring your kids.
Don't have kids.
That's enough of my BS at the start of the show. Also, early plug, the streams, guys. Watch our streams.
Yeah, come check out our streams.
We're getting a lot of great subscribers and getting more viewers than ever. But you guys are missing out on the fun. If you like hearing us goof around on podcasts, the streams are basically that, except live, and we're playing games at the same time.
Yeah, I think actually a few of the listeners have been jumping in on the streams. I've noticed a few people out there.
And on Wednesday, we do giveaways. So, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 3:30 to 5 p.m. Pacific time on Twitch. Check it out.
Check us out.
All right, so now I think we're safe to talk about the top seven, right?
Yeah, now we can talk about game stuff.
All right. Well, because I don't have a ton to say about this top seven written by Connor Sheridan, but maybe you guys have some too. Some words.
Some input.
It is the top seven side missions that are better than the main game. So, lots of games have side missions that you barely want to play or you're just like, this is cute. But time to get back to the actual, like, campaign and save this princess or whatever. But these are games that had ones that were way better than actually you weren't a distraction, weren't pulling you away from the game, were actually, like, more awesome. And so
they stole the show.
Stole the show. And so the number seven, Mass Effect 3, The Citadel DLC.
Take it away, Lorenzo.
This was the post. I know this one a little. This was the post-game DLC to Mass Effect 3. Now, everybody got mad at Mass Effect 3 at its ending, blah, 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 blah. But, like, it felt like the farewell. So they made like basically like the farewell DLC with Citadel. Like it, I think they, if they didn't outright say it, it pretty much was the last real DLC ever made for the Mass Effect trilogy. Mm-hmm. And it takes place before the end of the game. It's not post game, but it's written in the way of like you're playing this after you beat the game, and it's just this long, like kind of silly farewell to everything about Mass Effect, and you're like basically collecting everybody around the Citadel to then have a big party, just like to have a big house party and hang out together.
Yeah, I didn't actually play this one. The Mass Effect DLC that I probably would have chose was the Liara DLC in
The Shadow Broker?
Shadow Broker, yeah.
Yeah, that one is, I mean, that's great too, but
that one was
why be obvious, man? Like, I think the Citadel one is fresher too, and it's the newer one, and it also...
Oh, Andrew exploded.
Ugh. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, and he's back.
Sorry. And I thought coughing. I'd be coughing worse. I would have been a worse cougher last week. Anyway, sorry. You know, I'm going to try to cut that out. But anywho, the point is about Mass Effect 3, Citadel was cool. It was like this nice little reunion of all the characters people really enjoyed. But clearly nobody else played it here.
Yeah,
so.
I just didn't play it. I think I played all the Mass Effect 2 DLCs and not any of the Mass Effect 3 DLCs.
Were you just soured by the end of Mass Effect 3?
No, I really wasn't. I enjoyed the game.
You were just all Mass Effect outed?
Yeah.
Mass Effected out?
I enjoyed the series all the way through to the end, and then... once
moved
it ended, I was just
life.
Like, yeah, I'm going to play other games. This is cool.
All right, number six, World of Warcraft, Tyrion and Talion Fordring.
Why don't we have Tomas? He's the one who would know all about this.
I have
this.
No idea.
I read about this one in the article. Though I don't know, Max, are you aware of this one? You look like you were about to say
No, I was not at all.
Okay, cool, then. It's a tale of a father and son mission, like the father was presumed dead, but he was actually in hiding this whole time, watching his son from afar, and his son thinks he's dead, and he's following in the footsteps of his father to be a paladin, but instead he's falling in with a bad crowd of zealots who are paladins. And so his father, you're trying to get him to change his mind and not join these evil dudes, and you have to find all these... like artifacts of his father, and it leads to this very like really tearful moment between the two of them when they reconnect. It's an interesting side thing that isn't just like kill five rats or whatever you do in WoW. Like I'm being reductive about WoW. I don't play it. I'm sorry, but it at least sounds like good writing for a WoW side quest.
Sounds like from looking at it, it seems like a very emotional experience between father and son, which is not what I think of when I think of when I think of World of Warcraft. I think of that episode of South Park where they run around the forest killing boars for weeks and weeks. So this sounds way better.
Though, you know, I when I watched that episode, I was calling BS on it because I was like, I get it for plot purposes. You have to say this guy's more powerful than everybody, but. Like, there are level caps. He can't be that powerful. That's why level caps exist. Even if the guy who is so strong that he's killing everybody else is that strong, like, even if he played it all the time, he hit the level cap. He couldn't be more powerful than everybody. That's MMO 101.
Yeah, and if they wanted to level up by killing level one boars, eventually you wouldn't get any experience for that because they don't allow that. You don't get experience.
Yeah, exactly.
For killing level one boars when you're like max level.
Are you telling me South Park wasn't 100% accurate?
It's inaccurate. Explosions.
Man, you were breaking the thing. You're quiet so much of the time, Lorenzo, and then every once in a while you just get so much emotion. Like, yeah, see? Just like that. Just like that. All right.
Sound test.
Number six, five. Fallout 3, the Ten Penny Tower. All right, you guys must remember this one, right? Okay, Max, why don't you tell me about it?
Tenpenny Tower took place pretty early on in Fallout 3, didn't it? Because that was one of the first big branches in the game. You could either help Megaton, or you could go with the shady character you met in the bar who wanted to give you a bunch of money.
Head
on over to Tenpenny Tower and just push this button. Mm. Ain't no big.
But Tenpenny Tower is, he mentions it's like, Connor in the article mentions it's this really expensive hotel that's like unlike everything else in the world, not right. ruined. Like,
yeah, it's like this weird anomaly in the wasteland where like everything around, there's no, like, I don't know how Tin Penny Tower made it because there's literally nothing around it. There's no streets or like
desert,
city infrastructure. It's just this obelisk out in the middle of nowhere.
There's like a destroyed freeway off in the background.
Yeah, basically, you take the 101 down and you go down there about a couple of miles and then you get off that one exit if you want to go specifically to Tin Penny Tower. Literally nothing else out there.
Drive through the dirt. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's like go flying off the freeway at one point where it's completely shattered and then just drive through the desert for 10 miles.
Exactly. Take a dirt road. but Tin Penny was really nice just because it was a real change of pace compared to the rest of the game because it's actually still so well put together that like it's got this air of classiness that you don't usually find in the ruins of the wasteland.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number four, Batman Arkham City Riddler trophies. Now, I'm actually, look, I like the Riddler trophies quite a lot. I don't know if I would say they, like, there were a lot of great side quests in Batman Arkham City. Like, I don't know if I'd say, not to doubt our own articles
here. Let's
put
them on notice. Let's just put them on
Connor, are you listening, Connor?
Yeah, I don't want to, but the Riddler trophies were great. Like, but I actually, like, collected two, I hit, once I got 200 of, like, 400, once I hit half of them and I thought, I'm good. I think I'll do other side quests now.
I don't want to do that
again. And I'll just watch a video of the Riddler's defeat instead of doing it myself.
Yeah, I actually finished the Riddler trophies in Arkham Asylum.
I did do that.
Yes.
And that was really cool because it was, you know, at first it's just like, oh, you know, these are the things that you're collecting. But then, you know, you're interacting with the Riddler and he's like basically having this whole little side story like – in addition to all this, so it's not, it turns it into more than just like this collectathon.
Yeah,
it's pretty sweet.
Meanwhile, in Arkham City, like they double the amount, and beating him is really cool. But I also like, I loved the missions with Zaz. Like, Zaz was just on the phone with me. He's like, "I'm gonna murder somebody if you don't get here right now. Like, you got a minute." And it was a very basic race across the city mission that you'd see in a million open world games, but it had a great story hook to it.
Yeah.
And then I also love the sniper ones where you had to figure out where the sniper shot from and you were hunting down Deadshot. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And the Azrael stuff too, of just finding the Saint Dumas things,
the symbols.
And meaning Azrael. Like, the game had a ton of great side quests, including the Riddler things, which were really addictive. Like, once you saw, if you were going on your way to the next mission and then you saw, like, a cage with a Riddler trophy in it, you then, like, stop in your bat tracks and go, like, all right, let me see if I can figure this out. Like, and then, like, 10 minutes later, you're like, oh, I still got to get this. Screw this. I'm going back on this thing.
Yeah, just mark it. Mark it with your goggle thingy.
Yep. Click. Yeah. Those are the hardest ones. I remember, it was the, when I saw the trick of how to get one of the last invisible paint Riddler ones, it's like you have to go to the very top of the highest tower in Arkham, which is really hard to even get into.
Right.
Takes a lot of doing. And then you fall out of the tower, and you have to have the camera pointed at the tower while you're falling. And at the exact moment it lines up to form a question mark as you're falling, click the shutter.
Jeez.
That is the only way to get that one.
That's crazy.
That's insane. No, thank you.
Number three. Persona 4, The Social Links. Yeah, I don't think anybody here has anything to say about Persona, so we'll just move on.
Do you?
No, I'm kidding. I, of course, know everything about Persona. No, that's not true either. But I love Persona. I beat it twice. Persona 4 is my favorite RPG of the last decade. And the story of it is pretty good. Well, not pretty good. It's a really great, like, actual murder mystery that you have to figure out by exploring dungeons that are in this other world that you enter through a TV set. Like, and it's you also, like, delve deep into each of these characters. The bosses you fight are your other self, the person who's trapped in there. And the other self is just this part of themselves that they deny. I'm just like, and by denying your true self, you just empower it and turn it into a monster. You need to accept your true self, man. That's the really neat lesson of the theme of the Persona games. But So the dungeons and the boss fights are sort of are about getting to know your people, getting to know the other characters in the game. But the social links are all about that. And so they're these side stories where you just hang out with a character and talk to them, and you find out more about their lives. And you can do that with, like, over a dozen people in the game. And that and like they can be the your teammates, and you'll actually just get a new, like, they'll have the ability to have a new persona that's more powerful if you do it enough with them. And you'll get to know, like, this guy is afraid that he likes sewing a lot, and he's afraid that makes him gay. Let's figure out where that comes from, and you just get to know him better. Or a friend's dealing with, like, the depression of the girl he had a crush on is now dead, and he's like, oh, man, what? But she even hated me now that she was dead, but she hated me too. I don't know what to do with this. Like, there's so many great scenes like that, and you'd only get know them by doing the social links, so you're inspired to do them. Then a lot of times that also means you can't keep going with your social links until you improve some stat. Like, you have, oh, you need higher intelligence, so then you need to start spending a few nights reading some books to move up your intelligence, or you need to bring up your endurance, so you keep going to this all-you-can-eat thing, and if you can finish the bowl, the closer you get to finish the bowl, the more your endurance goes up.
Oh, God.
It's pretty nuts. But yeah, and then there are some that are just who aren't your friends. They're just a random person you meet. Like, you'll take a job as a tutor, and you think it's just going to be a thing to, like, raise your intelligence stats. But it's actually, like, you meet this kid, and after you teach him the first night, you find out his parents are in this, like, really rough separation, and the kid is, like, suffering, and you have to help him, like, figure out where he fits in this whole thing. And same with, like, you meet this older woman, and she, like, doesn't know what's going on in her life either. And or you'll let's see, what was another great one? I don't want to spoil them all. And it can also lead to dating things too. Social links, if you connect enough with some of the women you'll meet, you will end up, like, dating them. Oh, there was one. The creepiest one actually was the nurse one, which, like, you start working as a dude who, like, you take this job cleaning at a hospital, and then you meet this nurse who they pretty much imply, like, you sleep with her, like, that you, a 16-year-old boy, has sex with this, like, hot nurse in her 30s. And there's a couple jokes about that, which I thought, oh, is this all it is? Just the joke thing of having an older woman hit on you. But then she's like, I'm getting shiftless in my job. I need to find something else. I'm just not enjoying it. You know, talking to you's really helped me. And then by the end, she decides she's going to move to Africa and, like, like, take on just to help, like, be just an aide there in Africa. It's crazy.
That's so random.
That's definitely a big jump.
No, some people, one of the bad things with the social links is that you want to do all of them, but you literally, like, unless you do a guide that tells you exactly what to do every single day, you will never do all the links. But that's not what the game is about. It's not about getting 100% completion and having friends with everybody. It's about making friends with the people it's about making friends with the people you want to be friends with. Who, like, oh, this guy who's asking me to join the basketball team, he seems cool. Or, this drama team thing doesn't seem very interesting. I don't want to do that. And like, it's about telling your own, living your own life in Persona, not 100% completion. I have had to have these conversations multiple times with people, like, but I only have 5 days left in the calendar, and I can only befriend four of them, or I can only befriend one of these four people. I'm like, you gotta live your life, man. You don't have time for everybody.
Life has tough choices.
Mm-hmm. Though that game also informed me that, like, in Japanese schools, like, you only have Sundays off sometimes. Like, it's 6 day school weeks, like in high school, or at least this high school.
That's crazy.
Like, yeah, though they get a lot more, I think they get more days off randomly than American school students do.
Don't they also, like, their summer vacation is a week long?
They have a shorter summer vacation than us, but they have a longer winter vacation, this is all very generalizing about a culture that I haven't lived in.
Well, I mean,
only visited for maybe 2 months ever. But
I mean, that's just a fact. Like, if they get a week off, damn. But
all right. That was a long discussion about that, but that's because we won't have much to say about number two, Skyrim, the Dark Brotherhood.
I mean, this sounds pretty badass, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm understanding it right, it's pretty much it. So you want to kill the Emperor, and if you want to do that, you have to work your way up in this Dark Brotherhood doing progressively worse and worse shit to finally get to that goal. And I'm like, yeah, it's good to have goals.
Well, the Dark Brotherhood's always been the coolest, in my opinion, one of the coolest side quests in the Elder Scrolls.
I know people
games,
that prefer the Thieves Guild.
Thieves Guild's okay, too. They're like the two stealthy ones. Like, Dark Brotherhood, you actually go and assassinate people, which is cool. But they always have, like, these really crazy introductions. Like, I forget... did you do the Skyrim one? Or I think it's you. In order to get into the Dark Brotherhood, you have to go and kill somebody for this little kid.
Oh yeah, that was the one that's mentioned in the article that an orphan hires the assassins to kill the woman who runs the orphanage.
The orphanage, yeah, and then
dark stuff.
How is an orphan getting the money to hire an assassin? Anyway,
who knows? But you go and kill this person, and then you go to sleep, and the Brotherhood people always come to you when you're asleep. They when you wake up, they're like, "Hey, come with us," and mm-hmm. you know, and we know that you like to kill people.
We have cake.
Yeah, we have cake, and it's dark, and we're a brotherhood.
The cake is also dark. Chocolate cake.
It's always cool stuff.
Number one, Cafe and Anju from Majora's Mask. Now, let's not get too much into this, because Majora's Mask 3D just came out, and I don't want to spoil stuff for people who are just new to Majora. But
yeah.
It's less a spoiler and more a warning, I think, what you have to do to get to this point.
All right, so in general... I think Majora is the one, like, it might be the Zelda with the most side quests, because if you, like, you have to, you're doing the 3-day Groundhog Day repeat of a bunch of days, and that means everybody, people's schedules are much more personalized. Like, in other Zelda games, it's just, well, I'm the shopkeeper. I'm here all the time because days don't change. This could be day one, this could be day 400 of your time in this game. Doesn't matter. I always have to be here. So, but the 3-day cycle of Majora's Mask means people go, like, sometimes people go fishing. Sometimes they take off for lunch. Sometimes they're building something and it's higher up than it was the last time.
Sometimes they're dancing on a mushroom in the middle of the night. You know,
yeah,
it's weird stuff.
Exactly. You got to show up at just the right time, and you need a bomber's notebook to keep track of it. And if you want to unlock everything and collect all the stuff you can, you have to figure out you have to watch these people's schedules to figure out how to fix their lives. Like, oh, they have a problem. I better be here at 4 o'clock to stop this guy from stealing this thing.
Yeah, and the cafe and Anju side quest thing, that's the most intricate one because
insanely intricate.
Yeah, you have to use all 3 days to figure out what they're doing. Like, each of them, you have to go and find. You know, I think the guy, you see him, like, immediately as soon as you come out of the clock tower. And
he's one of the first things you see, and then up to the last minute.
Yeah,
there,
minute.
Yeah, so Cafe and Anju, they are star-crossed lovers who are, I believe, Cafe, she runs the hotel in town.
Yeah.
And Anju is, like, the son of the mayor, I believe.
Yeah.
And they're star-crossed lovers that aren't supposed to be together. He's higher class. He's high class. She's low class. They're not supposed to be together. And they've been having this secret affair. But now a terrible thing has happened to Anju, and he's disappeared. And she thinks he's run out on her.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of things you have to fix between the two of them. And I remember doing this. I could only do it in the original Majora's and complete it with a guide. And even then I was like, oh, no, the clock. Like, I remember, like, the second or third to last thing I looked at the clock. I had, like, maybe just beaten a dungeon and saw, oh, no. Oh, no, I got to get here. Yeah. Tick, tick, tick. Oh, no, stay right there, Anju. Stay right there. But if you want that fierce deity mask, you got to do it.
Yeah, I remember there was one part of it where on the old bomber's notebook, there's just, like, a sliver of time where you have to meet with Cafe, I think. And
You have to, like, get a key? You have to, like, rent a room at the hotel?
Yeah,
you have,
like,
to rent a room at the hotel, and you have to do it at a very specific time because the guy who's supposed to get that room comes in right after.
Yeah. Yeah, the poor Goron.
He's like, oh, my name's also Link. Yeah. Oh, well, I'll sleep outside. That's cool.
You know why that Goron's name is Link?
Well, because you take his room, and you're like, oh, do you ever, you say, His name is your name, whatever you name Link. And so if you say, hey, do you have a room for my name? They go like, oh, yes, we do. Here you go. And it's that guy was renting a room. He just had the same name as you, so you took his room.
No, and also in Ocarina of Time, Darunia, the head Goron guy's the main leader man, he has a son.
And he names
and
it
he
after
And he names
you.
Him after Link.
Wow, oh, I didn't know what? That. That's amazing.
So that's the Majora's Mask's version.
Crazy homages.
Of Link.
Crazy throwbacks.
I also saw this great shot in the game I missed before that at, like, the bomb store. The guy has a picture of him with Tingle, and he's like, oh, this guy is Tingle's dad. Like, this is the tough guy who is always giving Tingle crap that he's like, no, you can't become an elf. Yeah. Like, stop it. Grow up. You're 35.
He wants to be a fairy.
Yeah, it's like, stop wanting to be a fairy. You're 35. Like, time to grow up and get his real job.
Tingle's awesome, though. His first appearance. If you don't like Tingle, you guys suck, but, like,
shove off.
Yeah. His first appearance is in Majora's Mask, and he makes you maps.
Kurarimpa!
His little balloon.
Yeah, he has a job. He's a cartographer.
Yeah.
And he follows his goddamn dreams. You gotta respect that.
Yeah, definitely, I think the payoff of Cafe Nanju is worth it. Like, it's difficult, though they've made the bomber notebook a lot easier this time around.
Yeah.
And you can also, another pain of Majora has been fixed in that you can fast forward by the hour, not in 6 hour chunks, or was it 3 hour chunks? I forget, but it was definitely not by the hour. You could fast forward. So before, you'd have to be like, all right, they're going to show up at 8. It's 2. Guess I'll just stand here and make time move as fast as it can.
Yeah.
All right, but yeah, you guys should be playing Majora's Mask if you got a 3DS. It's really, really good. As our review that gave it a 4.5 out of 5 stated. All right, so that is the top 7. Fun, guys, right?
Woo!
Top 7.
Top 7, yeah. And we do those every Monday, so be sure to come back to the site and check out each new top 7. Now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it'll be the current events segment where we're going to talk about some big news, a number of previews, and a couple big reviews. So stay tuned.
Radio Radar is brought to you in part by Audible.com, where you can download audiobooks like Extra Lives, Why Video Games Matter, and Ready Player One. Download a free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/gamesradar.
And welcome back, everybody, and it's time for the ever-exciting current events segment. That's all right.
Volume up.
Volume up. I couldn't find a ton of big news this week. I think some people are sitting on announcements until GDC if they're going to do anything big.
Yeah.
They'll do it then. And we're in this weird dead zone of, like, things starting to the, like, first quarter games are mainly March games. And then after that, it's the steady uptick in stuff on the way to E3. And so we're kind of in that dead zone up to E3. But there was a pretty cool video we just posted on the site, which is 40 minutes of Final Fantasy 15 footage. Like, it's really long.
Dang.
It seemed to be just be like the demo of the new game, like the demo that's coming with Type Zero next month. Which I would hope so. Like, they got to be done with that at least. They may never be done with Final Fantasy 15. Who knows? But if the demo's coming with Type Zero, then it better be done now.
Yeah.
But
this 55% bullshit.
But it was a lot of it was a lot of open world running around in the footage and just like showing off the combat, which again is like so action focused. Like, I love seeing. So my big takeaway from it, I don't know if you guys watched it, but. Or, I doubt you watched all 40 minutes of it. I didn't. But as I was fast-forwarding around, what really touched, which really seemed cool to me, was the animation. Like, the character animation was so, like, fluid and specific, and it was not rote. I think it almost feels like they took to heart all those people complaining, like, these battle animations are so rote, they just go through the same things all over again. And in this one, like, they're, like, bouncing off each other and reacting, and, like, just a lot of, like, really simple mundane
natural
movements and natural actions that they don't normally have.
I did like that. I liked what I did see, just like kind of watching them move around. It seemed like a real person would move around. I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. And you know, and I don't want to like go crazy complimenting them or anything, but there are times when I watch some of these games and I remember trying to do like a simple checkbook balancing program in high school and how painful that was. So I watch these games and I'm like, sweet Jesus, how do they do that?
How do they keep track of all just the programming of it, you mean?
Just the programming to get a guy to lift his sword in like five different ways. It's like, holy shit.
Motion capture.
Well, that's why it took him 10 years. So yeah. You're seeing 10 years of work right there on the screen. And there was the cool thing of just picking your items, like three ghostly swords surrounded him, and then he just grabbed one sword and slashed, and surrounded him again and slashed with another one. It looked real cool.
And, is there any, like, character customization, material system?
Not that I saw, no. Like, but I'm looking forward to playing around with it some. I mean, with that demo and it comes with Type Zero. I'm also just looking forward to Type Zero. Like, I'm really glad we're getting that game.
I'm actually kind of excited for it. Like, I thought I'd given up caring about it, but then it was like, Type Zero is coming to America. Like, for real? I'm way more excited than I thought I was going to be.
Hmm. All right. And then the other news is that The Last Guardian still isn't canceled.
Woo!
But people. So the only thing that came up with The Last Guardian, the only things that happened with The Last Guardian is when news comes out of somebody saying, like, it's definitely canceled this time, and then in the next 24 hours, Sony has to go, no, it isn't. No, it is not canceled.
You stop that. You stop that right now.
We have nothing more to say about it, but it has not been canceled.
You're just stringing us along.
You know, maybe. Like, it seems like this week, Sony's, like, kind of in a weird spot, so maybe they'll be like, we better put it out.
They could, well, I mean,
bring out the big guns.
So what happened was The Last Guardian, The Last Guardian trademark died, and it wasn't renewed.
Oh.
And as the obsessive fans are wont to do, and I appreciate them doing it, they noticed it. Like, this should have been renewed on the 16th, on February 16th. It was not. The only reason you don't renew a trademark is because you're not going to do anything with it. And so it's tantamount to a cancellation. And then somebody finally got a statement from Sony. It was just the standard, like, say Last Guardian's not canceled. The end. But it was just another one of those moments of, like, I was hoping, can't you guys just say it's canceled now? I'm tired of thinking it could actually happen. Like, because I really don't think it is.
It's like, look, I'm already desperately clinging on to Half-Life 3. Don't make me do it with 2. I don't have that many hands. Well, I do have that many hands, but I'm kind of limited now.
Now, well, Half-Life 3 doesn't exist. Like,
you
just get used to that idea.
Yeah, I need it.
The Last Guardian was at least shown and presented as a game that existed.
Yeah. Like,
there's a picture of a crashed helicopter. There's icebergs. Don't do this.
That's not real.
That's just what somebody made in Source.
Valve runs Steam now. They don't do anything else.
No, they're never going to do it. Last Guardian's never going to happen.
Last Guardian probably never will happen either.
It's never going to happen.
No, I think.
Just give up hope.
I think it will happen because they are running out of options of, like, real games. And also, Sony as a company needs to be profitable, and they can't just have something like, we spent millions on this thing for 10 years, and it never came out. Okay, cool. Like, I think they'll just shove it out just to do it, just to be like, we finished it, here it is. Maybe it isn't the best game ever, and it doesn't fulfill its whole promise, but it's done, and we made some money off of it instead of no money. And then also, like, the guy who created the game, Ueda, like, he quit the company, like, 4 years ago. And he said he was on a freelance capacity working on the game, but it doesn't make any sense. Like, they have to announce it. Every TGS goes by, I'm like, they're going to announce it this time. They're going to show it this time. Nope, never, never, never. But there's always hope. As long as they don't.
There's never hope. Just give up. Just give up hope.
Jeez.
God damn.
It's not going to happen.
I agree with Lorenzo on this point.
Yeah.
There is no hope.
Let's pessimist.
Forget about it. It's not going to happen.
And the best, like, maybe just hope for, just stop thinking about it and then be happy when it is announced instead of, like, disappointed when it isn't. Just okay, I'm ready for it to just be canceled. I assume it's canceled. And then if in 2017 it actually comes out.
Well, you know when it comes out, the entirety, like, I can see it now. Last Guardian comes out, and everything we'll see about the game is, like, a real janky-looking screenshot, and then bold text that says, took 10 years or whatever. Yeah. Or something like some dude clipping through the floor or whatever.
That is the problem when it takes that long. Like, expectations are too high, and it can never be fulfilled. Like, Shadow of the Colossus was great, and I do think what is stupendous. I definitely think people were looking forward to it at the time, but it was still kind of cultish. Like, and people weren't like counting down the days to Shadow of the Colossus. And then, but once it was out, everybody wanted to say, like, "What's his next thing going to be? What would they do next?" They got the PS3, and like, it just seemed inconceivable that an entire console generation and the longest console generation Sony's ever had, it seemed impossible that could all go by without Last Guardian coming out.
You know, I'm just realizing, oh, God, I just got really nostalgic. I remember first hearing about Shadow of the Colossus on X-Play, and my one memory is Morgan Webb going, Colossus? Colossi?
Colossi?
I know it's Colossi, but it was funny listening. That's the one thing I remember about the first time I ever heard of Shadow of the Colossus. It feels very nostalgic. I miss Morgan Webb.
I'm sure she's doing stuff.
She's around.
I don't know. I know what Adam. Well, actually, I'm not totally sure what Adam Sessler does anymore either. But
Simon PAX a little while ago, so he is definitely around.
Well, he left Rev3. He was working at the site Rev3, and he's not there anymore. And so I haven't been following his career since that. Anyway, Last Guardian never coming out. okay, preview time. So I just want to plow through a few previews this week that I saw that are all real small-time games, but super niche, but I am really looking forward to all of them. And now I think about it, they're actually all on portables, too, which who plays portables? Not enough people, that's who. But okay, so first up is Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor 2 Record Breaker. And that's the official English name. In Japan, it's called Break Records. Have you heard people talk about Break Record? This is that same game. I know it all sounds very confusing, doesn't
Break
it?
But records.
So, the Devil Survivor side series of Shin Megami Tensei is a isometric view strategy game in the same style as, you know, Final Fantasy Tactics. And it's really awesome. Like, I've played both. I played through one and the remake of one through in their entirety, 80 hours. Then I played through Devil Survivor 2 on the DS. Another 60 hours. And now they're putting it out again, and it'll come with extra content. Like, what they're calling it, they're trying to say it's kind of like an epilogue, but really it's a second half of the game because they've said this is 40 hours long. Like, the new content, 40 hours. And then the game will also have a whole new localization, like a rewritten text and new new voice, like almost every line is voiced in it, I believe, and with English, with the new voices. So it's a remake of a game probably a lot of people missed, because I think Devil Survivor 2 came out on the DS after the 3DS launched, or close to it, and so it was an under the radar game anyway then, and then just pushed it farther under the radar. So you don't need to have played the original one to get it, like, to understand it. Devil Survivor 2 is its own side story, and it's just the world is destroyed. Like, apocalypse happens, and you're in Tokyo and it happens. World is effed up, and you have to go all around Japan. You go, and basically it's a tribute to the bullet trains of Japan, because you ride the bullet train to different places and then fight monsters and collect the things to save the world, and you only have 7 days to do it. And it has character designs by the artist of Persona, so it has a real Persona vibe to its story, though it doesn't play the same as Persona. So if you like the Persona games for their story and or the monsters in it, like Devil Survivor 2, really cool. So that comes out in May, I believe, and I got to play a tiny bit of that, but really just enough to confirm, yes, this is the DS game, but with three-dimensional graphics now, or with 3D stereoscopic visuals, ooh. But then last night I went to NIS's big press event they have every year a few weeks before GDC. And it was really cool. Like, they brought in the president of the company from Japan was there and gave a little presentation, and he wore a full printy, well, not a full printy costume, but like basically a hoodie that was a printy. And it was really cute. And I like seeing when the president of the company is like, I'm going to look silly. Let's have fun. Like that was,
I care about this.
And then they presented a bunch of games, and like NIS is most famous. That might be changing now, but normally they're known as the Disgaea people, like that, and the Prinny is their mascot, the little penguin thing. And they did show off Disgaea 5, which is now only for the PS4. Like, it was going to be one of those cross-system games, PS3 and PS4. Now it's just PS4, and they say it's the craziest, biggest thing ever. Like, oh, 9,000. They said it was...
You can grind so many dungeons.
Yep. You'll play this game for 120 hours. You'll never need to play any other game. Like, but I'm definitely interested in giving Disgaea another try on next gen. And then they also showed a bunch of really weird, like the side sequel to Guided Fate Paradox, and then Hotaru no Nihi, which is, it actually looks kind of cool. It's this Vita. They're also publishing. They're the only Vita game publisher now. They not only. Close to only.
But it feels like it.
They're publishing way more original Vita titles than Sony right now. That's for shit, damn sure. but they Hotel Naniki, which looked like a Limbo, their own approach to a Limbo game, which looks really cute. But the two biggies for me was Danganronpa, another episode, Ultra Despair Girls, which is the very strange Danganronpa side title, which is an action game. Mm-hmm. Sorry. It's an action game. And they had the producer there presenting it, and he's like, you know, all these action games, sometimes they have visual novel side games. We're doing it the other way, which we make visual novels, and now we're making an action game side game. And so it takes place between Danganronpa's 1 and 2, and... If you ever plan on playing Danganronpa, I actually say don't even watch a trailer for this game.
Yeah, don't even look at it.
Because since it takes place after Danganronpa, the whole point of Danganronpa is who lives and who dies, and not knowing that. So you'll see the survivors of the first Danganronpa in the trailer for this game. But if you dab
played, I hate it when they do that.
Well, because they assume if you're a super fan, you know everybody, and you'll be happy to see that Character X is back, and so is Character Y. It's exciting to see those things.
It's like when you watch a show, but you miss an episode, and then you see a commercial for the next episode, and it's like, oh, now I know what happened. Thanks.
You just have to keep up with Game of Thrones.
But you play as, I believe, the main character from the first game, Sister, who you see a brief shot of in Danganronpa 1. And it's Makoto Naiji's sister, and she has this, her weapon is a speakerphone. Like, it's still your voice that's most important. Like, that's what they wanted in it. And so she's being chased by Monokuma, the bear. He has all these, like, killer robots that are hunting her down, and she basically can possess them with her magic megaphone, or she can hit them with sonic blasts, or there was one cool shot where she was able to control a car to like put it into like neutral, and then just drove over a bunch of Monokuma robots. And so it's only on the Vita, and it also looks way better live on the Vita than it does in just a trailer on your computer screen, I'll also say.
Because it's like third person action.
Yeah, it's a third-person action game. Right. Like, yeah, it's actually, I'd compare it to Resident Evil 4. Like, it is a over-the-shoulder, like, camera view shooter, except you're using your words, man, and not your, and not bullets. But yeah, if you loved just the first Danganronpa, it was great. And I got to briefly interview the producer on the game. Like, by brief, I mean 10 minutes. But he talked about how the team at Spike Chunsoft, who is making it, like they'd worked on action games before, so this isn't like their first ever action game, and it's not them like screwing it up or anything. And he even admitted like it's really hard to write everything for a Danganronpa game. Like, it's a ton of writing to come up with the scenarios and the mysteries and all this. So so he was like, let's go with something a little easier, like just an action game of killing thousands of robots. Like, and also I got to show him my picture with the Danganronpa toys that I was with in Tokyo. I was like, oh, I was just in Tokyo. Let me show you the pictures of my Danganronpa toys. And he thought that was cool. I think Japanese developers, when you're interviewing them, they like knowing that you're a real fan of their stuff, because I think sometimes they're like suspicious of, like, do you even know who I am kind of things.
You just looked this up on Wikipedia right before. Yeah.
Just asked. And it was actually him. It was just really cool. And I'm looking forward to the writer of Danganronpa, who is like the guy for Danganronpa. He's doing a panel at GDC, which is I'm really excited to see that. And then lastly, in this preview thing, I want to talk about Rhodia Sky Soldier. So you guys know Yuji Naka, right? The creator of Sonic.
They can't hear you nodding.
Really one of... Yeah, you guys got to talk. This is a podcast.
Yes.
Saying words. Kind of important.
Know who it is.
All right. Yuji Naka, one of the co-creators of Sonic. He's kind of billed as the creator, and I think he was the head of the project, but there's more than one father to Sonic. But anyway...
Sonic has two daddies.
He left Sonic Team a long... I think close to a decade ago now. And he started Prope, his new development place, and he'd been working on a lot of small games, including his fishing game, which actually wasn't bad, but who wants to play a fishing game on the Wii? Like, it's like Animal Crossing, but all fishing. That was that game.
Did they do Ivy the Kiwi?
Yeah, they did Ivy the Kiwi. And one of his things also is that he likes to make games for the 3D, for the games that are on both portable and next home. And that's the thing with Rhodia, which was originally announced as a Wii and 3DS game, and now has been reborn as a 3DS and Wii U game. And I only played the 3DS version. I'm thinking the Wii U one is the better version, I'm betting. But the 3DS one, like, it's almost like the concept is too big for the 3DS. So Rhodia Sky Soldier is kind of his answer, or like his first big game in some time, and they've been working on it for 9 years, apparently, or no, 5 years, 5 years. And it's the combination of Sonic Adventures and Knights into one crazy combination where you're this sky soldier dude, and you're doing like the homing jumps of Sonic Adventure, and you do that, but then if you want, you can just fly in any direction you want and do those homing jumps at rings, and then the rings shoot you into the sky and you fly through them.
That was going to be my first question. I was like, how many rings did you fly through?
I flew through a lot of rings. But yeah, definitely it scratches those same itches as Sonic and Knights, so maybe if you're a person who thinks current Sonic games have sucked for a long time, maybe you should get excited for Rhodia when it comes out in the fall this year from NIS. So. Those were all the games I played last night at NIS. And I'll have you guys know, I stayed to just two drinks. Didn't stay. I was very professional there.
Ooh.
Professionally recommended.
I'm like some people there.
I mean, hey. Nothing.
That was all.
Well, I mean, if it's an open bar, sure. Open bar, open season. But no, I don't think that. I'm not a big drinker. Like, when we had the open bar, the company party, like when I had three, I was like, I'm very close to embarrassing myself and being too drunk. I need to stop right now. This is a company thing, and this ends at 6, and I have stuff I was going to do after 6, so I need to not be drunk.
Oh, I had a great time.
So did I. I definitely like stood up, and I'm like, okay.
I stood by that punch bowl a little too long.
I was also worried about being too like wobbly there, because like you're on this. It was on a real incline. Like it was on a big one of the hillier streets in the city.
That place actually had really good old fashions. Mm-hmm. Like I was drinking those all night. It was great.
That guy made very involved cocktails.
Yeah. It was like literally like 3 minutes to make a cocktail.
I thought, it's like, true. Dude, that's nice, but I'd drink a shitty well drink. Just
I just wanted a vodka cran. They didn't have cranberry juice. So I'm like, what the hell? I'm leaving, and then I didn't.
All right, so that's all the previews. Now it's review time, and even though let's start with the order, which Dave Houghton in the UK reviewed it. He was not a fan of it, and Ashley, I think you share his thoughts on it. You're the only person in this room that's played it. It just came out today, and a lot of people are raising a stink about it even before it came out, because there was a YouTube video showing up that said it was 5 hours long. But that's the least of the order's problems, right?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, it actually did end up being way shorter than I thought. Like, I got to a point that was about that felt like in a regular game it should be about halfway through, maybe a little less. But then it was like, oh no, there's like an hour left to go before the end. It's like, what the hell is happening? So that, like, pacing, not very great. So much of it was just walking down hallways with nothing to interact with, and just there was plenty of cool stuff to look at because the graphics are beautiful.
Dave mentioned it was one of the most gorgeous games he's ever seen.
It definitely is. Like, the cutscenes, that's what the game looks like, which is amazing, but then there's nothing to actually interact with, so I have no reason to actually stop and look at all the cool stuff, which sucks because there's so much cool stuff they put in there, but there's no interactivity to it, or virtually none. And anything that's actually in the room, maybe there are like five little things you can look at. There's no, like, they're just notes and things. Very few of them are plot relevant. They're not very interesting. So you're just kind of going down a hallway of pretty stuff. And every once in a while, you get to shoot something, kind of generic shooter. And then you get to do QTEs. So many
QTEs. I did see somebody pointed out that, like, they just wholesale reused some QTEs, like, later in the game. Like, just the I saw this side-by-side picture of it. Like, wow, they really did it. They used the entire QTE over again.
I actually didn't notice because enough time had passed while I was playing it. But look, actually seeing it, like, next, like, back to back like that, I was like, oh shit, they are totally right. I remember that now.
And it's only single player, and I believe in Dave's review, he pointed out that, like, it just ends, like, it's just like, and done, like, no, there's no real climax. He said it felt like the climax was missing and that it was being saved for a sequel or DLC or something, and when it already feels short to not even have a, you know, satisfying ending, like, is like, it's just the icing on this shit cake.
Yeah, it would have needed a really good ending to kind of save it, and it didn't happen. Oh, and I don't know how deeply he went into it, this in his review, but for me, this was probably the thing that I thought was the most egregious problem, was that there's that lack of interactivity, like I said, but there's also an issue of if the game doesn't want you to do something during a certain sequence, it will prevent you from doing it. Mm. Like, they're like, well, we want you to walk down this hallway, but we don't want you to get under cover. So the cover button isn't going to work until the next scene. You're not going to be able to sprint down this hallway. And it's not just like one time. It's like whenever the game wants. And it's like, oh, I'm not going to let you switch your gun because I want you to use a pistol in this scene. And it's like, what the hell? So it's kind of taking control away from you, which is
QTEs do that anyway. But then to like keep holding you back like that does seem very annoying.
It's a more advanced QTE. It's like the future of QTE.
Oh, God.
Walk down this hallway. You can't do anything other
than
that.
And that it's all single player. Like, there's no multiplayer to it either, which, if it was multiplayer with a short campaign, if it had multiplayer and a short campaign, that's more forgivable too. I think Dave gave it a 2.5 out of 5, which is, you know, a median score, though not by no means nice. But I think he thought like it was still like professionally made, and maybe even like, but it's $60, not the right price. Maybe as a rental or borrow it from a friend or something.
Is it even worth the story? Like, is the story of the characters, are they interesting at all or anything?
A couple of the characters, I feel like, if you're into mustaches, this is the game for you. Mustache Simulator 2015. But the reason I bring that up is because that kind of summarizes some of the character's entire personality. But then there are other characters who are actually kind of interesting. Like, I actually liked the girl, Lady Igraine. She was cool. The rebel leaders were pretty cool.
Does she have a mustache?
She does not have a mustache.
Too bad.
She would make a mustache look good. But no, I would say like Sir Percival and Marquise de Lafayette, who are two of the other guys on the box, their personalities are kind of summed up in, look at that mustache. Yeah. So
just because they're named after the Knights of the Round Table, it makes me want to play it because I like that.
I mean, we got a copy you can borrow. And if you know somebody that you could borrow a copy, I mean, what else are you going to play on your PS4 right now?
If you know some other sucker that bought this game.
I'll give the order this. It is a great tech demo for what the PS4 can handle. So it's a little like if you saw Kara, Quantic Dream did that thing with Kara for, I think, the PS3. It's like that, but longer, and $60.
Right. Well, maybe they'll have it figured out by the Order 1986. I hope that's a sequel. Not that it takes place now or in the future, that it takes place in 1986.
That would be an awesome game. They could have giant cell phones and
that'd be so cool. Pistols. People need
Greed is good.
More games need to be set in the '80s. Like,
yeah.
That's really like not just Hotline Miami.
Martini glasses full of cocaine.
Hotline Miami is, I think, set in the '80s, right? I mean, it feels like an '80s film, that's why.
Okay, yeah.
Now that's a game I can't wait for Hotline Miami 2. That is minor news. Like they announced they're putting up some free online comics of Hotline Miami 2 in the countdown to the release of that game.
Nice.
I cannot wait for that.
And I will The Wolf Among Us. You want an 80s game. That's in the 80s.
Yeah. All right. Don't need the percussion.
Yeah.
I'll do what I want.
So maybe don't play that game. Read the review and you'll see.
Watch it on YouTube.
Maybe just watch the whole game on YouTube. Apparently, it's basically a movie anyway. So,
ouch.
Meanwhile, the one that you definitely need to play for yourself and not just watch it because it has like two cutscenes in the entire that are maybe 10 minutes in total is Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, also known as Kirby and the Rainbow Paintbrush in Europe. I reviewed this game. Exciting, right? And I gave it a.
Have looks of like excitement and whoa.
So, you know, a fair point is while I was making fun of the PS4 for having nothing, the Wii U actually has nothing. Like it literally has no games on it. Like in between, it is pretty much the GameCube except worse from a library standpoint. Like with the GameCube, it was okay. Wait for the Nintendo game. But that'll only take a couple months. Now it's like, wait for the Nintendo game, it's 3 months.
Bad you can't play GameCube games on your Wii U.
Yeah. Well,
that's your homebrew.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
No, don't do that. This is the first big Wii U game since Captain Toad. And it's similar in Captain Toad in that it's a cool idea that's kind of short but doesn't overstay its welcome. But it's also still cool and not criminally short like The Order. Did you guys play in the Nintendo DS game Kirby and the Canvas Curse?
It was much beloved at the GameSpot offices.
I'll take that as a no.
Personally, have not played it.
I still remember a VG Cats comic of like very purposefully running Kirby into lava with the rainbow stick, and it's just like, is that how you play that game?
So this is the sequel to that, like almost 10 years later.
of that scene specifically.
Sequel to Kirby burning.
Kirby into the lava.
So yeah, it's all touchscreen. So first off, I loved it because the gamepad doesn't get used at all. Or the gamepad had been criminally underused.
The good.
The gamepad had been criminally underused in so many games up to this point. And this one is like, no, it's all gamepad. Like I played like 70% of the entire game. TV off, like just on the gamepad.
I thought you said the gamepad wasn't used at all.
Oh, no, no. Like, in this game, it's all gamepad.
Okay. It's like, how do you even play this game?
Well, you kind of have to use the gamepad to play it, too, because you're using the stylus and you're drawing and stuff. It's kind of hard to.
If you're drawing freehand on the stylus but looking at the TV, like you're really. That takes some real practice.
Well, we were playing.
ZBrush skill.
We were playing this on the stream, like on Wednesday, and there was a couple of guys that were like, I use my Wacom template all the time, and like, I could probably do it. I'm used to it.
But, you know. Maybe we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. But
you don't have the accuracy.
But yeah, and we played the multiplayer some on the stream. We got to play it early, which was nice. The multiplayer really makes it easier. But it was fun too. Played as Waddle Dee.
Yeah, it is a little extra awesome because you're kind of like you're the Tails to Kirby Sonic. So you could just. You have direct control over little Waddle Dee, and he's got a spear, so you can just spear a bunch of stuff.
And you're jumping
moves.
When you want to jump and going the direction you want. And while me with a gamepad, I was just drawing lines for Kirby to roll on, and you have to like think about momentum and movement and like I've got to, and then you tap on him to make him zip up the thing and go up higher. It's a lot more demanding, and it's a real puzzle platformer, and it gets really like logic-y, mind-bendy at parts. Like especially if you want to collect all the five treasure chests in each thing, and it's similar to Smash Brothers in that it has a ton of trophies and a ton of music. I think that's like Hal's thing of like, oh, you just need to have a ton of music and a ton of trophies to unlock all the time.
Yeah, I think one thing everybody was really impressed with on the stream, too, was the visuals. It just looks like this Gumby version of Kirby.
That's the real best thing about the game is that it is like claymation visuals that just look astoundingly good. I love it. And it's like kind of like how Kirby's Epic Yarn was like, oh, you're in a world of threads and fabric. In this game, you're in a world where everything is made out of clay. It looks molded and come to life like you're... Like, you see, like, thumbprints on characters. They all look handmade, and it's so cool looking. Like, it's so cool just to, like, look at the world, like, the goofy visuals bouncing around. I think it's actually, like, it's more fun that way than just polygonal. Because I played the 3DS game of Kirby's last year, which was fine. It was real good. But it was bland Kirby polygon looks. Like, this... Yeah. Giving him this kind of thing, like they need to have a visual hook for every Kirby game now, I think, from now on, because the otherwise standard Kirby just looks kind of plain.
He's
by
just
comparison.
A big pink ball. Otherwise, it's cooler to see a big pink ball of clay than it is to see a big pink polygonal ball
eating clay apples and stuff. Yeah. Also, he doesn't If you like Kirby suck and stuff, he doesn't suck once in this game. Like he keeps his mouth closed.
He just rolls around.
He rolls around in a ball. I feel like in Canvas Curse there was an explanation for why he was stuck in ball form and couldn't walk around. Like they have a story explanation for it. In this one, it's just like he elects to roll around. That's just what he does.
But he does morph into stuff. It's not like he doesn't transform.
Yeah, those transforming stages are awesome too. Like they basically become shooters, vertical scrolling shooters, or no, horizontal scrolling shooters. But yeah, and then in those stages, you're tapping on the screen to shoot where you want to shoot, and it's really cool. I had a great time with it. If you have a Wii U, like it's only $40. Well. Only that makes sound like $40. That's nothing, but it is not a full price game, and it's still pretty long for being a $40 game. They're not like giving you half a game, and so yeah. If you have a Wii U, like this is a great thing to get. Like especially if you wished drawing on the tablet did more stuff than just make Link look at something or whatever. So. I would definitely say get this one if you've got a Wii U. Like unless you like hate cutesy visuals, because it's like the cutest game ever. But if you're filled with hate and can't take it,
take these rainbows.
Anyway. All right,
that's not manly.
So yeah, I gave it a 4 out of 5. So those are the big reviews this week. I think gonna be quiet on reviews for just a little bit. I think Blood Rain's the next big game, right?
Bloodborne, yes.
I keep saying Blood Rain.
Come on, guys.
I want to imagine it's Blood Rain. Sorry, what did you say?
Resident Evil Revelations 2.
That also.
Episode 1.
Next week.
Yeah.
All
right, so we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's a community segment where we answer your question. Well, no, we read your questions of the week. Answers. That's what we do. See ya. Hi, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us here. Now it's time for the question of the week, the community segment.
Community segment on Radio Radar. We read your stuff if it's good enough.
Woo! Boy.
Lorenzo, I had that one up. And Lorenzo and Max are too professional to dance.
No dances today.
Come on, guys.
Time.
Get your energy up.
It's too Friday.
You're too full of too Friday.
It's Friday.
This is one of the lesser Fridays we've ever had. I think it's really because both Sophia and Jan aren't here, and so it's just like, oh, the cat's away. The mice will
go to sleep.
Yeah. okay. So last week's question of the week was like, are you still into – how do you feel about physical media? Are you still buying physical copies of stuff, or have you gone all digital? And so I picked the favorite my favorite replies to it, and one of you guys is going to win something. So I'll start with Aaron Baba wrote, physical? Nah, come on, man. That means I got to get up off the couch, swap discs, sit back down, possibly readjust where I had my drink sitting. But most importantly, I probably had to move my cat who was on my lap. I can't be expected to do that, so she's so cute. But a Zelda game, you say? Oh, fuck that cat. I need the gold. And you'll notice a real theme to these, which is similar to our replies last week, which is if it's a Nintendo game, a lot of people still want it physical.
Yeah.
Apparently, those are the special games. Otherwise, you'll just download it.
It's just the magic of it. Namsam says, I've gone strictly digital since living as a Peace Corps volunteer.
Ooh.
Very nice. Appreciate you. Having no access to stores that offer games made digitally, digital a necessity. Having no access to stores that offer games made digital a necessity. Sorry.
There you go.
You got there.
My
reading comprehension was off.
It's way too Friday. But my 3DS helped me make it through those long, lonely nights with just my friends in Animal Crossing New Leaf. The 3 days it took to download games on my 25 kilobyte connection were worth the wait.
Oh, ouch.
See, man, that's crazy. Like, wherever this person is in for the Peace Corps, like, they can't just go to a store and buy a game. But then their internet is so slow that, like, it takes them 3 days to get a 3DS Ooh. Game.
That's love.
That's hardcore.
I'm not 100% Benkos.
Bankos Stepson, I guess?
Bankos Stepson. He says, or she says, I'm not sure. At this point, I definitely prefer digital over physical copies when it comes to things like my PC or my 3DS, because I want them to always be with me to play. When it comes to home consoles, it can go either way, unless it's something like a new Metroid game, which is something I do terrible, humiliating things for the chance to own physically.
It sounds so weird, like to own physically.
To hold in my hands. Counterweight 72 says, I always try to get physical releases for the games I buy. At some point, the servers holding older games will shut down, and I will not be able to access the game if I bought it digitally. Plus, games are like boobs. If they are digital, they are great to look at, but I would much rather hold it in my hands.
I'm sorry to make you read that one. I apologize.
I can really visualize it now. I was talking about. It's like,
I don't disagree.
I may have put that one in there without reading the last sentence on there. But yeah, I think that is a good point. That once the servers are down, like, you might not have access to it, like, or you might not have legal access anymore. And at that point,
it's the developer's decision. It's like, how much control are you comfortable with giving to the developers over the things that you own.
And make it available.
That was what I was saying last week. I was downloading some stuff from Steam, and I was like, so how does this work to Lucas? And he was like, well, you don't actually own, like, because I asked if I could delete something. He's like, well, you don't actually own it. You're basically renting it. I'm like, fuck this.
Well, that's what Scott Michella was, our coworker Scott Michella was guilting us about. He was like, what games are you going to give to your grandchildren, man? Are you just going to say,
you're going
to
give them a code?
You're going to give them your SD card?
I mean, granted, giving some of these games to our kids is going to be really hard because do you still have the system functional? Can it plug into your TV?
Will the HDMI plug into whatever eyeball screen we're going to have in the future?
I bet at the very least there'll be an HD converter thing you can just plug into a wireless outputting
that
whatever.
That goes wireless into your brain.
Yeah.
It's true. I'm already having that difficulty.
One of those HDMI to brain converters lying around? I need to get one of those.
I would joke you to go to Radio Shack for that, but those aren't a thing anymore.
Are they not?
No, they went bankrupt last week.
Yeah, there was one across the street from me, and they got big signs out. Closing down forever. Yeah.
Where am I going to buy batteries?
Radio Best Shack buy. Finally ran out of money.
Batteries.
Like, the speaker wall didn't save
I'm
them.
Actually surprised they lasted as long
I
as
couldn't,
they did.
I would always walk by. There was a Radio Shack on the corner of my street, and I'd walk by it every day. And every time I'd walk by it, They think, like, how are you still open? Yeah. Like, who buys stuff from you guys?
I was like, who's still buying these remote control airplanes?
Where am I going to get my RC car?
I literally never bought at Radio Shack until I lived near where you live and went to just that Radio Shack because it's the only electronics store anywhere around there. Yep.
The only, it was one of those, like, it was kind of like the emergency room for electronics, at least for me, because it was that close. And I was like, there's no other place I can go to where I can definitely count on them having a plug for this thing. Like, I rolled my like desk chair wheel over the power cord to my modem, so no internet. So I was like, gotta internet where? And that, so that's when I went to Radio Shack and just showed them, like, here's the outlet. What power thing is this? They're like, here you go. Like, and now that's gone.
No problem, sir. I'll help you out with that.
So the winner is going to be Nam Sam, because I really like that story of the both being a Peace Corps volunteer and like the dedication to wait 3 days for Animal Crossing to download to your 3DS. So
you have won
something. Send me an email to RadioRadar@GamesRadar.com identifying yourself, and we'll send you something, probably a code for a game, because you might be hard to send physical things to. And it sounds like you prefer digital things anyway. So
that works.
All right, so this week's question of the week has to do with The Order, which is apparently it's one of the most like graphically impressive games ever. And it is, what game like dazzled you the most with graphics? Or what's like at least the time you remember going like, wow, this is a video game? Wow. Anybody have, I can start us off here if you guys have anything.
So,
it's a tough one, because definitely the first time I saw the scope of Super Mario 64, I was like, wow, this is really its own world. Like, this is a giant 3D world. I'd never seen anything like this. Though, also, when I first played Wipeout, like, I think that might have been it, because, like, the video, I mean, it's totally just the racetracks are more like, now we know racing games are not easy, but they're one of the first things you see on a system. They're like, this looks amazing. It's the best looking thing. But for Wipeout, it was a new idea. And Ridge Racer for the time in 1995 looked really good too. But Wipeout was the first one. I was like, holy crap, look at this thing. Like, look at this. These things fly by me. This looks better than Toy Story. Wow.
I'm gonna go around the same generation as you, Henry, with your Mario.
We're easier to impress in our teams.
Yeah, like when I played Ocarina of Time for the first time. Remember, you're in the Kokiri village, and then you walk out and you see the Hyrule Field, and then it was just like, you can see all the way across Hyrule Field, and like everything before that, I remember I played. I don't know if this is like actually true, but they all had like the fog of war thing where it was just like everything.
I mean, Turok definitely did.
Yeah, Turok had all that, and it was just foggy, like 5 feet in front of your face, and it just had to load all those textures and do all this stuff. And then, you know, with Hyrule Field, you could just see, there's Death Mountain over there, and there's the castle, and that's where the lake is, and you could just run across the entire thing, and it was just absolutely amazing. I'm like, wow, this is really big, and I'm in such a big adventure thing. It's crazy.
It's the last all Thanksgiving break.
Yeah.
In terms of like the first thing I was really impressed of graphically, it would have to be a Chrono Trigger on the Super Nintendo. I remember as a kid, that was like the first game where, having played all these other games, the Super Nintendo and Genesis and stuff, this is the first one where I really like started to appreciate, like, this game looks really good. When you're on trial and there's the huge stained glass window of the guy holding the scales, like, that, I thought that looked really beautiful. And like when you go outside Magus's castle for the first time and it pans down like over the moon and over his castle, that all looked really cool. And then there was lots of just detail and everything in the world. Like, there were like little books and things on tables and bookshelves, lots of books basically. I didn't get into putting books on things, but just seeing like the level of detail that they put into these little tiny sprites, I remember being really impressed with all that. And there were lots of, like, you'd be walking around, especially in the prehistoric times, there was the one like dungeon you would go through in prehistoric times where the games, it would play tricks on you with like the light coming through the leaves of the treetops, and you could see the shadows of the leaves on the ground, and then it like messed with your depth perception. You didn't know if you were like up on a platform or down on the ground level, and it kind of played with that as part of the dungeon. Yeah, lots of stuff.
Yeah, man, back in the 16-bit era when there was a shadow, that was a trip.
Shadows were like big deal.
And there was a shadow there, and you walk through it, and your character gets
darker,
and you're like, whoa!
Well, because of those shadows, like, somebody had to draw those by hand in most cases.
Yeah.
Well, and then in once we got to polygons, like, it was just a program of like, cast shadow here.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It cheapened the whole thing.
Oh,
stop being good when it was. No, I'm kidding.
When there were polygons. I think I actually have two because I think these are unique enough reactions. The first one was when I was like, I should not say my age because you will groan. I was a certain age and I played Final Fantasy X and my friend just like booted it up and I was just like, holy shit, what is this? Because it did some of like the cutscenes and I'm like, this looks freaking amazing. And now I look back and I'm like, the cutscenes still look pretty good, but everything else, oh dear. But that kind of blew me away. And then at a much, much, much later age, playing Assassin's Creed Black Flag on 360, not even the good one, but I was playing on 360 and I was like yelling at my roommates. I'm like, you guys got to look at these turtles. You got to look at this ocean. Oh my God, I want to swim in the ocean. Holy shit.
Yeah, that was a great looking game too. I want to mention another one. Metal Gear Solid 2 was one that was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was demo when they first showed Snake running around the boat and then he pulls out his gun, goes into first person mode, and you could see the rain droplets bouncing off his gun. We're like, what? Yeah. PlayStation 2, this is crazy.
Only the PlayStation 2 could do this, man.
Yeah.
I remember going through that stage and just shooting all the bottles. Like, look at the bottles breaking. You could actually shoot the bottles and they break.
That was crazy. That was a crazy time.
All right, so go to the comment section for this week's episode on gamesradar.com and put in answer what game graphics most impressed you. You can do the first time or just like ever. Like, what's the most awe you've ever felt while enjoying a game's visuals? Could even be a bad game, just one that's like, wow, that looks awesome. So put that in the comments and one of you will win something next week. So hey, come on, you want to do it
then. Yeah, you want to win stuff.
So that's it for this episode, but just a quick reminder about our streams and also the First to Five series on YouTube, right, Max? Mm-hmm. You want to give a little explanation to people?
First to Five, yeah, that's me and Lucas sitting down and going head-to-head, seeing who's number one in a variety of different games. We had one, let's see, crap, what was this one? I always remember the one that we record this week, but that doesn't go up until next week. So, anyway, we had one go up this Wednesday.
Isn't it the Frisbee thing?
Oh, is it Windjammers?
Windjammer.
that one was really fun. Windjammer, I really like Windjammers. Lucas really liked Windjammers, but I guess not a lot of people know about Windjammers. But if you want to educate yourself, definitely look it up. The game is actually super fun. It's basically just really aggressive Frisbee.
All right, I am going to watch that video.
Do love aggressive Frisbee.
And it also streams Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 3:30 Pacific is the start time. Be sure to check all those out. All right, and then until next time, Radio Radar